Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Carrie Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
Hey folks, welcome to Blockchain Life. This is Carrie Oberbrunner and I have with me another blockchain expert today. His name is Gabe Higgins. And where are you from? What business are you in? And tell us about some blockchain things.
Yeah, Carrie, I'm super excited to be here. Thank you for having me. I've been in this space now. It's been my eighth year.
Wow.
Talking about Bitcoin and crypto and blockchain. I started. Bitcoin came across my path pretty early on in its life cycle. It just turned 13, and I think I found it when it was 3 years old.
Wow.
Or wait, 20. It was late 2012. So almost 10 years. Oh my gosh, can't keep track. And it came across my path because of my interest in technology. First of all, I went to college for computer engineering. Mm-hmm. I was building computers myself when I was a teenager for gaming purposes, of course.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, that was my nerdy outlet.
Sure.
But then fast forward to the 2008-2009 financial crisis. That's what really got me into digging into like what the heck's going on with our financial system, mm-hmm. right? How can a country like ours come to the brink of financial calamity like this? So that really got me down the rabbit hole of understanding our monetary system, mm-hmm. our monetary policy, fiscal policy, and going down that rabbit hole. So,
just curious, around that time, did you read, I don't even know if it was out by then, but like The Creature from Jekyll Island or anything?
Yes. Yeah. That was one of the ones that really sent me spiraling down.
I read that one and I was like, wow, there's some crazy stuff going on here. Cool.
Yeah. Because you read it and it reads like a fiction.
Right.
Novel.
It's almost
right?
Too unbelievable that.
Totally. You go fact checking and then you discover more stuff and it's like, oh my gosh, this is insane.
Yeah.
So yeah, it starts to make sense, right? You understand how it can be so insanely corrupt and, and manipulated, and how we can come to the brink of self-destruction we have been, and I think we still are. We're not out of the woods yet.
Yes.
So that's where going down
that path. Currency that kind of got your attention at first.
Well, again, at the time it was Bitcoin, right? It was.
Yes.
I was going down the path of understanding money, mm-hmm. like real money. So understanding why gold has been money for thousands of years, right?
Yes.
And my dad was a gold bug, so that resonated with me. Okay. So I started understanding sound money.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bitcoin came along across my path. Mm-hmm. And that's where everybody started to really, especially in those circles, those like hard money libertarian circles were the first to gravitate towards that. So that's where
digital gold scarcity, all that, right?
Yeah. Right. So that's where Bitcoin came up in these conversations online. So I was like, oh, well, what is this thing? So started researching it, started digging into it, trying to understand the actual, like what's behind it, like what's the technology here. And that's where I just really got fascinated because it's a rabbit hole unto its own, into itself, because it is a novel thing. It's an invention that changes it changes a paradigm that we never could before this invention. And I think a lot of people miss that about Bitcoin, that it solved a computer science problem. It was a computer science problem that has always existed since the dawn of computers, which is how can digital information put out there, how can you prevent it from being copied ad infinitum? That has always plagued the computer science world.
And is this
world.
Is this that whole concept of avoiding double spending?
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So when it comes to value, right, imparting value onto in a digital sense, we could never do it before because of this problem, right? And we just innately think that, you know, that's the way things are. You know, when you have digital information, you can copy it, right? I take a picture, I can send it to you. You can send it to somebody else. You can throw it online, and now millions of people have access to it. There's no limitation in that sense. And we're used to having information be that way on the internet, where Bitcoin comes along and says, now we have a way of encapsulating a digital thing in a way that can't be copied ad infinitum, can't be manipulated in a way that other people have access to the same thing in the digital realm.
That's crazy. And that's because of proof of stake, proof of work, decentralization, all these components that basically Bitcoin solved.
That's right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And now that's changing a whole new paradigm of how we can do everything, all new capabilities on the internet now that are possible that weren't before, because you can imbue value in a digital realm the way you couldn't before.
Wow. Okay. So you mentioned as a kid, I was nerding out building computers. You come across these Bitcoin conversations, your mind's blown. It's 2012. Walk us through give us the overview of the last 10 years. What changed? What happened?
Well, it's completely changed the trajectory of my life.
Yeah.
So after discovering it, learning about it, and understanding it, and it took me a while, right? At that time, there was very scarce information on it. You didn't have YouTubers all over the place talking about it as like the latest and greatest investment. Nobody thought it was a great investment.
Everyone thought it was talking about, right?
Yeah. And then Silk Road came along and was using it. And so it had this very ominous, cloud over it.
Criminals, illegal.
By criminals. So I was even scared to even talk about it to my friends. I've never done drugs. I'm a completely straight edge. I don't even drink. It was like this dirty word. You couldn't talk about it because you'd automatically be associated with all this criminal activity for whatever reason.
I've heard banks could even, there's cases that banks, if they heard you had crypto, they could and would shut down your accounts.
That was the case up until maybe 2 years ago.
Wow.
So I was trying to understand it, trying to learn more. I had so many questions, right? Mm-hmm. And there's only so much information you could pull from online at the time. Mm-hmm. So that's when I just decided to start the Tampa Bay Bitcoin meetup groups.
Ooh, what's that? Did they say that again? What is it called?
Yeah, Tampa Bay Bitcoin.
Tampa Bay Bitcoin, which Miami's huge and Tampa Bay's close by. And
Yeah. So I started a meetup group. Just go to meetup.com and it allows you to create a group around anything, right? And there were all these meetup groups popping up all around the world. Hmm. But there wasn't one, near me. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll start it. And that's where I was able to attract just a handful of people at the time.
Okay.
That were also kind of, you know, in the same boat. They were trying to understand this thing. They were interested, but had nobody to talk to about it. So we kind of coalesced a little group there that met every other week or so, just talking about, okay, you know, what is this stuff? And, you know, how do you, answering each other's questions, going back and forth, just sharing knowledge and information. And then that kind of kept growing until 2017, which is when, you know, we had the first huge crypto bubble, if you will. Although there were a couple spikes before that in Bitcoin. Sure. But this is where, Ethereum kind of blew up, came to its own. And then all the tokenization, ICOs, etc. So that's when we started getting, you know, at the time I was getting maybe like, let's say, 6 to 12 people at a meetup, right? So we could fit around, you know, a table at a restaurant.
Sure.
But at that hype of 2017, we were having hundreds of people trying to come out and learn.
Oh my God.
So it became untenable to hold it at the place I had been holding it for several years. So that's when we decided, me and my partner, Rosa, partner in business and in life.
Yeah.
We decided to open Block Spaces, which was just basically a community hub for anybody in the area that wanted to learn more about this stuff. Because
and you got to tell
emerging
me
about, technology.
Yeah, you got to tell me about this because I honestly just Googled smart people on blockchain and your name came up. And I said, I'm starting a podcast. I want to get people who know something. And then I found you somehow. So I don't even know much about Block Spaces. I just knew you knew about blockchain. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, well, so it's a company that I founded with my co-founder. And at first, we didn't even really have a plan. There's no business model. I was just like, we just need a space. You know, we have all this interest coming to the meetup, and I can't keep searching for venues to host this thing. So we rented this huge room that we were able to host any kind of event anytime we wanted. And that's what we did. We had an event going on almost every night of the week. So we had like Mining Mondays, Trading Tuesdays.
Oh, this is good. Like
the general meetups on Wednesdays, developer meetups on Thursdays, and like movie night on Fridays or whatever. So and this was week to week. And we had people coming in, learning, getting educated. And then we had, you know, the technologists, the developers start to learn how to work with the technology and then started building stuff. They started building solutions or launching their own business in the space. So, and at that time, you know, we had opened, it was a fairly big success, I would say, locally anyway. And we were the first of a kind of community hub for specifically
like for blockchain meeting space with the lens of blockchain.
There were a couple of them popping up around the world, but we were the first of a kind, definitely in Florida, if not the southeastern mm-hmm. United States. So it was cool. We loved it, but we had no business plan, no model. I had no idea how I was going to monetize that. I just knew we just needed to open it. So we did. Then, of course, the market crashed in 2018, which led to a couple of years of what are we going to do? Because the attendance follows the price of the market, unfortunately. I mean there was a remnant there that left, that stayed, you know, the true believers
people.
That understood what the implications for the future, and they were dead set on, like I was, on doing something, building something for the future. So those types stayed, but it wasn't really enough to sustain what we were doing, hosting all these meetings. And we tried a membership model, like a WeWork thing. It didn't really work when the market crashed. So we kind of pivoted into doing consulting and customized development. Because we made a little bit of a splash locally. So we had other businesses and companies come to us and asking us about, hey, you know, how can we incorporate this into our business to help either streamline processes or payments or whatever. So we started doing that, and that was bringing in some revenue. But we kept running into this problem with how do you get these blockchains to scale from a business use case perspective. So that's where we came up with the kind of current model or iteration of Blockspaces, where we're now developing a platform that enables businesses to leverage blockchain or Web 3.0 technology, if you will, within their traditional business environments and applications. So, because what we kept seeing is when you're building in Web 3, you kind of have to, you first have to go, okay, well, which blockchain am I going to build on? Like what's my use case? And then what's the blockchain that's going to be able to support it? But then you have to build a vertically integrated application stack that pertains to that one blockchain and that one use case. So in that, we didn't really see that as tenable for a lot of businesses. You know, they don't want to shift their business process from what they're used to this new thing that they're very unsure of, that hasn't really been tested or proven out, just to solve this maybe small problem that they have in their institution. They just rather just deal with the problem, honestly, then
it only appeals to the early adopters that are future thinking, not the safe conservative people that say, let's just do our bread and butter. What did you start seeing? What were some of those early businesses that said, let's hire Blockspaces? What were some of the industries?
Yeah, well, like you said, more innovative companies that want to be leaders in their industry. Okay.
Like plumbing, carpentry, like anything.
No, not like that. More industrial. So manufacturers, producers, that are dealing with supply chain issues, as we're seeing now. There's a lot of use cases that the everyday person don't realize that's happening within a business context or within a particular industry, because you're just not aware of it, right? You're not in the industry, you have no idea what the problems that they're having to deal with and solve for. And a lot of those, a blockchain of some kind actually could be beneficial. Even if it's more like a upgraded database, because in some sense the database is distributed, right, and being shared across a business ecosystem, which is very beneficial. Right now you have all these silos of information, different businesses structure their data that they're transacting with each other in different ways. So there's a lot of friction that happens on a day-to-day between businesses just because the data and information flow is not unified. where a blockchain unifies that and secures it at the same time. So you have these additional benefits that blockchain innately provides that you don't get from traditional Web 2.0 systems. So
I'm going to give my audience a super nerdy example illustration.
Sure.
Maybe you saw the movie, but Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So it's almost like the elves, the humans, the dwarves, everyone's fighting. Business, old school, right? We have our database, we have our systems, we have our database, we have our systems, we have our database, we have our systems. And as a result, we're very much distrusting. We're very much silo. We're very much, you know, we want to win selfishly. And you're saying blockchain is kind of, in a weird way, blockchain is kind of like the hobbits where it integrates into all, and all of a sudden now trust is created, shared vision is created. And as a result, we're able to speed much faster and progress. I mean, that's a weird analogy, but it's kind of...
No, it's beautifully said. And that's one of the things that we saw that really inspired us about getting businesses on using blockchain in some way, shape, or form, because it creates... It's a shift in how you think of business.
Yes.
Because it creates this co-opetition,
yes,
where instead of you're competing with a particular agency for market share, you actually, in this environment, you want to cooperate because you're streamlining your industry in how it does business as a whole, as an aggregate. So it's more effective, the analogy, more efficient.
Oh yeah, efficiency is key. So the analogy is, because some of my audience is super skilled, some of them are just learning this, but the old analogy of, hey, I want to buy a house. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what you said, the friction was pre-qualify, real estate agent, titling, background, liens, boom, boom, county commissioner. It's like the process becomes so long and expensive, because you have to have all these verifications. Blockchain, essentially, I want that house. Boom. It's, if everything's already tied to the blockchain, credit, title, all these things, it just happens very quickly. Exactly. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, it's a big leap, though, to get to that point, right? It sounds like, oh, yeah, just snap our fingers, put everything on a blockchain, we're good to go.
We're in the early stages.
We're in the very early stages, and all that seems fanciful, but it's actually doable. The issue is getting those. A blockchain is only as good as the number of participants are on that network, right? Mm-hmm. Metcalfe's law. So you need to have a network effect on whatever it is, whatever you're doing with whatever blockchain, you need to have some kind of network effect. And if these businesses don't coalesce around a particular blockchain set of blockchains, there's now frameworks that are interoperable with each other, you're not going to get the kind of traction that you need, or you just lose all the benefits of a blockchain if it doesn't get enough participants on that network using the same thing.
But do you, being kind of a OG, you see that in the last 10 years, as you've been in this world, in the blockchain space, there's a awakening. Kind of like, just like with the internet, where in the beginning, it's like, yeah, that person's got a website. Big deal. You know, I'm not going to do that. It costs money. We have a brochure.
Yep. Right.
Then people start onboarding. And then people, essentially, if they're not part of the internet, they're obsolete, irrelevant, go out of business. So you kind of see a tipping point, and we're at the beginning of the Great Awakening, but do you see it? You have a better perspective than me. I've only been in this for less than a year.
Yeah, definitely. So there was, especially in the business world. Well, I mean, we've seen how big Bitcoin has become, and me being extremely bullish on Bitcoin early on, I could not have foreseen how fast the adoption of Bitcoin would take hold. I just could not.
You thought it would be,
you would have told me,
your lifetime or something.
Yeah, we were talking, oh yeah, you know, 40, 50 years from now, yeah, Bitcoin will start getting adopted by
banks
for payments or banks. Yeah. Or I it was fanciful to think that countries would start adopting it.
Yeah.
But here we are, right? PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, Square.
Right? Yeah, everything.
Visa, MasterCard.
So this is kind of why a lot of us who are on the inside now, we feel like it's game over. Like, I mean, game started, I guess you could say.
Right. I think so. I think we've entered a new era, right? Bitcoin has ushered in a completely new era of where banks and their traditional services that they offer are going to be obsolete. They're just not going to be necessary anymore. We can automate those processes, and we can use distributed systems to do that.
Do you think there's a term that my audience might know, they might not, but it's a maximalist, right? Bitcoin maximalist. Is that the term where, you know, one ring to rule them all, Bitcoin rules everything? Do you think that that's the case? Or do you think that Bitcoin, although maybe the standard, there's going to be plenty of other coins that'll have utility? Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah. So, this is something that is, you know, I'm very keen on, because I've seen a lot, right? I've seen a lot of things claim that they're going to supplant Bitcoin because they're faster, cheaper, better, you know, XYZ. They could do more applicability, programmability. But what I haven't seen is anything approach the kind of, well, first of all, traction and security that Bitcoin has, and the trust that's imbued in the system. Like, these networks take time to grow, and that time also imparts on it a certain level of trust, because they have to be time tested. There's no way to cheat that, right? You can't fast forward that. And Bitcoin has just shown time and time again, flawlessly almost over the last 13 years, to be a hardened system that is extremely resilient to any disruptions that it gets thrown. And it's been thrown some wild things.
Oh, yeah. Countries banning it, everything. Yeah.
Countries banning it. Several times. China's banned it numerous times. That's a great example. China banning mining even. Wow. So getting down to the level of, okay, all the miners that are supporting this network, we're going to ban them. But Bitcoin didn't skip a beat. It was able to route around that issue easily.
Was it Andreas Antopoulos? He says that Bitcoin is like a sewer rat that just keeps coming back, as opposed to Bubble Boy, which is, you know, something that one little virus, it gets and it dies. We almost have. So,
yeah.
All right. Here's
a word. You have fragile systems and you have anti-fragile systems. And Bitcoin has shown to be the premier, most anti-fragile system that we've ever seen, that we've ever had in the history of humanity. So, and now it's tied to a valued asset. So, like, I don't know. I'm extremely bullish on Bitcoin. And not just for the price. It's the transmutability of the value, that you can store value in this vehicle and it can't be hacked, can't be manipulated, it can't be shut down by any nation state. We've seen that happen, or attempts, and they've just failed. They've just completely failed. And no other network has had the same kind of testing like that. So
here's a weird
to me, that's where Bitcoin stands above everything.
Makes sense.
Not I don't know if it's above everything. I mean, because I don't consider myself as a maximalist in the sense that others do. I think Bitcoin has the best potential to be the thing that changes the world. All these other things I think are interesting to some degree. I think they're
Ethereum
demonstrating innovation.
Yeah.
It's demonstrating innovation that I think is useful. I mean, clearly Ethereum has gotten way more traction than I thought it ever would. And I was in on the crowd sale of Ethereum. I was at the very beginning. So I understood the value proposition then. However, I did not retain the value proposition in the long term, because I just didn't believe it would ever happen. Certainly to the degree that it has now. You know, a bad investment move on my part. I sold off way too soon, but
that's okay. You didn't know. Yeah.
I didn't know. Nobody knew. Especially at the time of the crowd sale, it was a flyer to buy into that, because Ethereum wasn't even a thing yet. It was just a concept. And it took almost 2 years for them to actually launch after the crowd sale. So, I mean, amazing. I don't know how that nobody can get away with that these days. But for whatever reason, Ethereum was able to slip under the radar at the time.
All right. So, we'll go into speed round. Got about 4 minutes left. Give me some quick thoughts on this. We'll also tell people where they can find you and things. Do you think Bitcoin was created by aliens, another government, conspiracy, multiple people, single person? I mean, it is so incredible, the halving, you know, the how it gets cut in half, and the proof of stake and proof of work. Who came up with this thing?
Yeah, and obviously I don't know. I wish I did. But I don't think, and I've heard all of the angles and gone down all those rabbit holes of who is Satoshi. And I joked on Twitter several years ago that I think it's an alien from the future. an AI from the AI future invented Bitcoin. But no, obviously it was clearly somebody very knowledgeable. Actually, I don't think an AI could do it, because you have to understand human nature, because there's game theory behind this. There's psychology and philosophy that the book that I helped co-write, Thank God for Bitcoin, kind of gets into the morality behind how specifically Bitcoin.
Oh my gosh. Listen, I've done 3 interviews today. I forgot that you had co-written that book. Folks, I'm telling you, the book that you have to read. Oh my gosh. I'm an idiot. I should have been talking all about the book, but I'll show you it. I've read this book multiple times. It's right here on my in my library. In our last 3 minutes, we got to pump this thing up big time. Because you know I'm a publisher, and I want to get this book out there in some big ways. Because, I mean, I know pastors and churches and And Jimmy's going to be coming on. Now I see it. I'm so sorry. So Gabe, let's focus all of our time on that remaining time. I thought, and I'm a pastor, and I'm Master's Divinity, Doctorate of Ministry, Bachelor of Bibles, Dad's a pastor. I used to think money was neutral.
Mm-hmm.
But when I read that book, my mind was blown. And I'm like, whoa. First of all, Jesus talks more about money than heaven and hell. Second of all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second of all, Bitcoin is based on value creation, where fiat money is based on government regulation. And debt, which is
slavery. It's ownership.
Talk to us, man. Just go on a whole rift here about, we're going to extend this a few minutes. Talk to us, because I am so passionate about getting this book out there. And then after we're done, I'm going to have a follow-up session with you, because I want to get your book out with Amazon SEO and categories and keywords, and almost like relaunch the thing. Okay. So we'll schedule a follow-up. But I mean, my secret power is publishing and marketing of books. And so talk to us about, how did this book happen? Why did you write it? All this stuff.
Yeah, I'll try to be brief. So, you know, this industry has a lot of skeptics naturally involved. Because we're skeptical about the current system, right? And how it operates, how things are working now. So when you know, I'm a Christian. I've been involved in church all my life, and I'm still currently involved as a musician in the worship team.
Sweet.
And have been since youth group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just finding other believers in the space was what seemed to be very rare, very few and far between. So when me and Jimmy actually spoke at the grand opening of Block Spaces, he was our keynote. So we had him there. He did his whole programming session as well with developers. So that's when we first met in 2018. And so we just started talking, and learning about each other, becoming friends. And it was actually a couple of years after that, he approached me. He was like, so do you know any other believers in the space? And I'm like, yeah, I know a couple actually. He's like, all right, I'm trying to put together a group. I want to put together like a, I don't know, like this Bitcoin, Bible study group or of Bitcoiners. And I'm like, okay, that sounds, count me in, I'm in. So we started doing that. We started reading some books together. It's more like a book club,
sure,
than a Bible study. But we started reading Honest Money by Gary North, which is a fantastic book. Gary North, he's like an economist that is also a believer. So he wrote a book with that kind of context. And if you read Honest Money, you can definitely see how we really reflected how he structured his book and how we structured ours.
Mm.
And then we also read The Ethics of Money Production by, I can never pronounce this guy's name, but the author of that, he was also an Austrian economist, and just goes through a long history of the ethical nature of money production. So that calls into all these questions of like, well, you know, what does it mean to create money? What does it mean to mint? And how should that be done? What is the apparatus there? What is the context? And there's a lot of, you know, spiritual correlations behind all of this. And of course the Bible talks a lot about it. Like you mentioned, the Bible,
Jesus
speaks about money. And if you think about the whole nature of salvation, it's also put in monetary terms, like our sins are paid for.
Yes. Reconciled. Yes.
All these things. Right. Yes. It's all put in terms of these monetary terms.
Abraham believed in God and it was credited to him as righteousness. Yeah, totally. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And so as we're reading these books, we kept coming to the conclusion to these books.
Yes.
As being, gotta get back on the gold standard. Yeah. And that felt so, I mean, us being all Bitcoiners were like, no, you missed it. And of course, I mean, defense, these books were written before Bitcoin even existed. So
interesting.
There wasn't the solution available. It was, we had to get back on the gold standard, which is completely untenable at this point. So that's where we felt like, okay, we need to answer. We need to answer this. We have the answer. It's Bitcoin. We need to put it out there that we have the solution to this problem you know, how do we get back on sound money principles? How do we get off a fiat standard, off this debt-based money system that is riddled with corruption and perverse incentives for human behavior?
Yeah.
And incentivizes just terrible habits, terrible behavior, terrible saving habits. We don't plan for the future. We're very short term oriented on a fiat standard. Also a great book that was just put out by one of our friends, Saif Edeen. We recommend his book, The Bitcoin Standard, and his new book, The Fiat Standard, that goes over all of the particulars of these systems. But so we don't really dive into all the particulars of how Bitcoin works or anything like that. We stay with our book, we stay very much oriented on a high level of why this matters. Why is this important?
Yes. I'll tell you what,
from an ethical perspective,
your book, and again, man, I've read a lot of books. Okay. I think your book is the most important book that Christians will read in the past decade.
Yeah.
You can quote me on that.
We will quote you on that.
Because I'll tell you what, I opened the book and I thought this was going to be all hype and it was going to be all a big joke, you know, this, you know, God and Bitcoin, ha ha ha. And when I read it, I was like, this is amazing. Because here's the concept. I'm really into time. Okay. So my business that I started in, I spray painted it on my car in college, redeem the day. So it comes from Ephesians 5:16. It talks about the days are evil. So make the most of the time.
Yeah.
When the government prints money and then puts it into the economy without value creation, the thing that I got from your book, I was like, oh my gosh, if we really sit down and understand this, if there's $1 million in the world and the government prints another million, everyone that has the million, and now the other million has been added, the government has robbed your time.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And what is time? Time is life, and time is memories, and time is family, and time is eternity. And, you know, it says
all of human effort is wrapped up in our time.
And it says,
we don't have a proper
count your days, because the days are absolutely crazy. Yeah.
Days are numbered.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if we don't have a proper mechanism to value our time, because we have this other entity over here that's dictating that to us
and makes some
and manipulating that, we are a slave. We're being owned by somebody robbing us of that time and our effort and our energy. And that's theft, right?
I bought your book for my pastor. I bought it for my dad. I've bought it. Listen, we're going to bring you back. How I know Jimmy's coming and I've never met him. And I've invited, I think I invited every single one of your co-authors.
They're all geniuses, smarter than me.
So how would you, cause oh my gosh, it's, you know, I'm not going to judge myself, but I so wish I would have had, the, you know, it's the end of the day and I've done two other interviews and, but I want to do again. And here's what I want to do. I want to relaunch your book for you. Okay. There's no charge. I know marketing very well. And you think you can bring back your co-authors for a global online launch party where I just drum up a ton of attention and get pastors and churches and you're like, would you be up for that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Sounds great.
So folks, you heard it here and now you see I'm human and boy, am I reminded of that every single hour, but I wish I would have talked about, but you know, that's fun because you said you were straight edge. You didn't drink, you didn't do drugs. And then I said that too. All the signs were there, you know, but anyway, we'll bring you back. Okay. We'll launch book and, we'll get Christians and kingdom minded people. You know, you guys were the OG, you were the early people. This is going to go mainstream now.
Yeah. To that point, we released the book. So we wrote it during the pandemic in 2020. Yeah. We released it on Thanksgiving of 2020. And it's gone bonkers. We now have several different translations in other languages happening right now. And it's just taken a life as its own. We really have done a very poor job of marketing our own book. But it's one of those things that, you know, once you read it and understand the implication, you pass it on. And so that's very much how it's been and how we want it to be. Really, we want it to speak for itself. Yeah. And we wanted a kind of a provocative title, kind of instigate that conversation because I think it is we feel like it's a very important conversation to have and that needs to be have, especially amongst the faith groups around the world.
Listen, man, we're going to blow this thing up. I'm looking at it right now. A bunch of you don't even have author pages. You do. But your other people, we could be putting in here RSS feeds into your author page. There's actually a lot of your people do have pages. But categories, keywords, metadata, this is where I live. I want to get back to you guys. I want to get this out. So let's do this. Okay. I got to pick all up my daughter from school though, but we're going to stop the recording. Where can people find out more about you? And then I'll give you some next steps.
I'm at Tampa Bay Bitcoin. I still run the meetups, even though I'm running the business as well.
Tampa Bay Bitcoin.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll have a Thank God for Bitcoin website soon. We don't even have that.
Yeah, you will.
So yeah.
Yeah, you will. We're working on it. All right. We're going to blow this thing up. All right. Thanks for being here, everybody. Go follow Gabe and get the book. You will love it. Buy a copy for your pastor. Share it around. And if you're not a person of faith, read it anyway. I've sent it to people who are atheists and I'm like, listen, you read this because it'll jack up your mind. And they're like, dang. So
You don't have to be faith oriented to understand what the book is trying to convey.
Sounds good. We'll see everybody.
Thanks for listening to Blockchain Life. We hope today's conversation ignited your soul and inspired your mind. Post your comments in a podcast review on iTunes or your platform of choice. We read every single review because your thoughts matter to us. Please share this episode with a friend. We look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.